Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls paper, The Courier, for Tuesday, November 16th, 2021. I'm your reader, Mary Dove. Reader, listeners, today, if it's your birthday, you share it with actor Clu Gulager from the film The Last Picture Show and TV's The Virginia. He is 93. Actor Joanna Pettit from Knott's Landing is 679. Actor David Leisure from Empty Nest is 71. Actor Marge Helgenberger from CSI is 63. Drummer Manny from the Stone Roses is 59. Country singer-guitarist Keith Burns of Trick Pony is 58. Actor Harry Lennox from The Blacklist is 57. Guitarist Dave Kushner of Velvet Revolver is 55. Actor Lisa Bonet is 54. Actor Tammy Lauren from Wanda at Large and Martial Arts is 53. Singer Brian Adams of Color Me Bad is 52. And actor Martha Plimpton is 51. So happy birthday if today is your day. Let's look at the front page of the Waterloo Courier. We have our headline reads, UAW mulls Deere's latest offer. Harvest is nearly complete, driven by deep commitment. And the last headline is, Auditor, Iowa spent $12 billion in federal funds in fiscal year 20. All right, well, let's start with our lead story, UAW mulls Deere's latest offer. CIPP incentives seem to be sticking point for many members. By Kara Smith, Quad City Times. Picketers say tensions are rising ahead of a Wednesday vote that will determine whether more than 10,000 UAW members go back to work or stay on the picket lines. Deere & Company made its latest offer Friday in hopes of ending a strike that lasted more than a month. The previous offer was turned away November 2nd by a 55% to 45% vote, with support from some Quad City Union locals, but rejected from shops in Waterloo and Dubuque. Leaders on both sides are declining comment, saying they wish to respect the process as rank-and-file union members begin to learn about the new offer. Workers who'd seen details in the new contract said the changes focus largely on the company's incentive programs, or continuous improvement pay program. Each local is responsible for informing its members about the new offer. Outside of Davenport Works on Monday, strikers said they received two Google Docs about the offer at 9 a.m. It's a big mess right now, said one worker, referring to a discussion in his local. If this passes, there will be other people who are not happy. Negotiators on both sides hope this offer is enough to end the strike. If the Deere workers vote down this most recent agreement, they might trigger an impasse. The National Labor Relations Board requires an employer and unions to actively negotiate unemployment terms until they agree on a labor contract or reach a standoff or impasse. An impasse is a total breakdown of the bargaining process that occurs after good faith negotiations have been exhausted, according to the NLRB. This could lead to potential legal action to bring a third party into negotiations or forcing both parties back to the negotiating table. Deere has said its latest contract offer is its last, best, and final offer. Workers on the picket line Monday seemed split on how they vote. Some said their concerns with CIPP, the incentives program, weren't addressed through the language changes in the new contract. CIPP is a team-based sharing system that provides an opportunity for employees to make extra money when they demonstrate a level of performance over a long period of time. Workers who have criticized the program say it is designed to boost productivity, but it's often difficult to meet the threshold that triggers pay increases. Also in the contract, workers said, are terms that protect their earnings in case of supply chain disruptions, a common problem across the industry during the COVID-19 pandemic. CIPP is extremely complicated, and it's intentionally complicated, one worker said. Union members have until Wednesday to figure it out. Good luck to all involved. Our next headline on the front page of today's Courier, Harvest is nearly complete, 97% of Soybean Crop and 90% of Corn in the Bin by James Q. Lynch. Courier, Des Moines Bureau. The first snowflakes fell last week, but with 97% of the soybean crop combined and less than 10% of the corn crop still in the field, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Niang says the prospects of completing the harvest looks good. Precipitation slowed fieldwork in parts of Iowa, but allowed farmers 4.1 days suitable for harvesting, baling corn stalks, applying fertilizer and anhydrous ammonia, and fall tillage during the week, ending November 14th, according to the USDA. Farmers have harvested 91% of corn for grain, which is 4 days ahead of the five-year average. Moisture content of the field corn being harvested for grain was 17%. Farmers in south central Iowa have over 20% of their corn for grain yet to harvest. In some places, cattle have been put out to graze on corn stalks. The soybean harvest is virtually complete at 97%, the USDA said. Although precipitation helped improve soil moisture levels slightly, topsoil moisture levels rated 1% very short, 10% short, 81% adequate, and 8% surplus. Subsoil moisture levels rated 6% very short, 25% short, 66% adequate, and 3% surplus. Multiple weather systems brought measurable rain along with the first snowfall of the season across portions of Iowa, according to Justin Gleason, state climatologist. The state produced a broad shield of moderate rainfall with a broad swath over the state's middle third reporting heavy rainfall. 70 stations measured an inch or more, with most stations receiving at least 1/2 inch. A gauge near Cheriton observed 2 inches, while Allerton reported 2.98 inches, with the statewide average of 0.86 inches. Weekly precipitation totals range from 1/10 inch at Rock Valley to 2.98 inches in Allerton. The statewide weekly average precipitation was 0.93 inches, while a normal is 0.46. Iowa also experienced warmer than average temperatures, even with a late week cold snap. A few stations reported low 70s, with a statewide average high of 66 degrees, 16 degrees above the normal. The statewide average temperature was 42.7 degrees, 5.5 degrees above normal. Shenandoah reported the week's high temperature of 72 degrees, November 7th, 18 degrees above normal. Forest City reported the week's low temperature of 20 degrees, November 13th, 5 degrees below normal. Despite those warmer than average temperatures, several stations reported a trace of snow and more than 25 stations observed at least 1/10 inch. Forest City measured 1 inch of snow. Well, congratulations to the farmers on getting the harvest in. Our next headline on the front page of Tuesday's Courier, the headline reads, Driven by Deep Commitment. It's accompanied by a colorful picture of Ryan McGowan, Cedar Valley native who now teaches at UNI, the school from where he earned his bachelor's and master's degree. Empathy, work ethic, altruism at heart for UNI associate professor. And this is under the 20 Under 40 Awards by Karis Golden, Cedar Falls. For Ryan McGowan, 38 years, working in Louisiana and Florida helped him see the Cedar Valley with fresh eyes. When you leave and come back, you tend to recognize the things that are really good about a place, explained McGowan, who serves as associate professor of communication and media at the University of Northern Iowa. He grew up in Waterloo and moved to Cedar Falls after ninth grade. He graduated from Cedar Falls High School, then earned a bachelor's and master's degree at UNI. A doctoral program took him to Louisiana State University. He taught there, then in Baton Rouge, Florida, before returning to Cedar Valley in 2019. Since then, he has earned tenure, written books, and become head of the department. Opportunities to have an impact on students' lives and serve the community helped draw him home. Ryan is driven by a deep commitment to making education accessible to everyone, noted John Fricks, Dean of UNI's College of Humanities, Arts, and Sciences. He is clearly both a leader and a role model in his career, having been elected to multiple national and regional leadership positions, which he has used to create opportunities for young people and diverse scholars throughout the nation. McEwen exemplifies a strong sense of empathy and a solid work ethic, added Fritsch. For example, he learned several students in his department hadn't connected with the COVID-19 pandemic forced classes online. As a result, he called each one to ensure they had everything they needed to keep up with their studies. At about the same time, members of the Cedar Valley JCs worried about mounting the organization's annual school supply drive. McEwen agreed to helm the project. It's a massive undertaking, and so many people in our area depend on that help. There are people who rely on it, he said. He and his wife, Danielle, have two children. One of the reasons we came back to the area is that the schools are really good. Some of that is because of the way we help each other. In addition, McEwen is helping to coordinate a professional clothing closet for UNI students. For some students, putting together appropriate professional attire is difficult, especially if things are pretty tight financially, he explained. For those who lack such resources, we will offer basic apparel they can wear to job interviews. It's the sort of thing that boosts confidence and ensures students feel like they have a better shot. McEwen brings this altruistic mindset into the classroom, too. He oversees the university's required oral communication course, which enrolls as many as 700 students per year in the fall, spring, and summer sections. Unfortunately, the textbook is really expensive. About $150, he noted. McEwen joined three colleagues to devise a way to reduce or eliminate the cost. Ultimately, they decided to write a new textbook. It will be offered to enrollees for free by authors Catherine Goslin, Danielle Dick McEwen, and C. Kyle Rudrick and McEwen. We found some money from the state to help us with the minimal expenses, he said. It will be free online. For those who want a paper copy, it can be as close to free as possible. The project will save UNI students a combined total of $100,000 per year. In addition, UNI graduates who go on to teach oral communication at other institutions will be allowed to offer the book for free to their students. It's been a real blessing to look at a problem and legitimately say, we're going to do this thing. We're going to fix this. We're going to do something good in the world. He enjoys that progression from discussion to collaboration planning and then action. I majored in philosophy as an undergrad, he recalled. I stumbled into that after I took a philosophy class and really liked it. I liked asking big questions. He also is a volunteer educator at North Tama and the Meskwaki Settlement School. McEwen enjoys looking at the conditions in which problems present themselves and studying how people respond, what leads people to find common ground. Timing played a big influence. He graduated from high school a few months before the events of September 11, 2001. This and other factors influenced his research, which examines how ordinary people use media to argue. September 11th was a time when people who were not politicians thrust us all into the intensely political moment. It was an interesting time to study this stuff and make sense of it, he recalled. As I've continued in my education and research, I circle back to how everyday people disagree and find ways to persuade others. Congratulations to earning the 20 Under 40 Award. Our last headline for today's Tuesday edition of the Courier on the front page. Auditor, Iowa spent $12 billion in federal funds in the fiscal year 20, much of the $3 billion increase tied to coronavirus aid. The journalist is Rod Beauchart, Courier for the Des Moines Bureau. Des Moines, the state of Iowa spent about $12.3 billion in federal funds in the fiscal year 2020. That represented about $3 billion increase, much of which was tied to the coronavirus aid relief and economic security aid, according to an audit issued Monday by State Auditor Rob Sand. Sand said about $2.3 billion of the 32.7% spike in federal aid in the state receiving during the 2020 fiscal year came from the CARES Act, while changes in non-CARES and non-loan programs included an increase of about $518 million in funding for Medicaid expenditures. Expenditures directly related to the CARES program, according to the 96-page audit released Monday, included $1.4 billion in additional unemployment insurance, $605 million from the Coronavirus Relief Fund, $97 million for the Educational Stabilization Fund program, $56 million in the CARES-related Supplemental School Breakfast and Lunch program. Expenditures for programs not related to CARES include $4 billion for Medicaid, $1.4 billion in capitalization grants for clean water state revolving funds, $598.8 million for the highway planning and construction, $491.6 million for the unemployment insurance, $482.7 million for capitalization grants for drinking water state revolving funds, according to the report. While state office officials administered about 600 federal programs during the year ended in June 30, 2020, a total of five programs accounted for about 70% of total federal expenditures not related to CARES funding. In his audit, the Democratic state auditor reported nine internal control deficiencies and three instances of noncompliance of various state agencies within Republican Governor Kim Reynolds' administration, including $448,449 in unsupported salaries paid within the governor's office from the Coronavirus Relief Fund. According to Sand's report, the deficiencies he cited address issues such as lack of policy and procedures to ensure variances are identified and corrected, ways various reports are reviewed and approved, including the all proper information submitted to the federal government before the due date, and ensuring all required information is included. In addition, he said there were three non-compliance funding addressing question costs of $113,813 paid to incarcerated individuals, $124,698 in payments to decrease individuals for unemployment insurance, and $448,449 in unsupported salaries paid from the Coronavirus Relief Fund. He provided the state agencies with recommendations to address each of the findings. The governor had a budget shortfall. She had too many people on her personal staff and didn't have a big enough money to pay them all. So instead of addressing either the budget that she had or the number of staff she had, she decided to use CARES Act money instead, Sand said in an interview. We warned her back in October that it would be difficult for having her office salaries qualify as CARES Act usage, and gave her specific directions on how to make it most likely to qualify, Sands added. He noted that requests for documentations were not provided, and he expected federal overseers may request that some of the federal money not used for pandemic-related functions be returned. Alex Murphy, Reynolds' communication director, issued a response Monday, saying the U.S. Department of Treasury confirmed that the use of coronavirus relief funds to reimburse the salaries and benefits of a governor's staff is allowable expense. During this time, the governor's staff spent a vast majority of their time responding to the pandemic. In fact, many members of Governor Reynolds' staff worked even 7 days a week out of the state emergency operations center to provide direct support to Iowans. This has always been our justification for expense, said Murphy. We are now working with Treasury to provide them documentation per request. A copy of the state auditor's report can be viewed at auditor.iowa.gov/reports/audit-reports. All right, that does it for the front page. Let's turn to some Cedar Valley news. UNI tuition program builds path to success. Access award to cover college costs for some low-income students by journalist Andrew Wind. Waterloo. Waterloo Community School seniors who are racial or ethnic minorities and have financial need could get all of their University of Northern Iowa tuition and fees covered through a new program next fall. UNI recently announced the Waterloo Access Award, which will use federal and institutional grants to pay those costs for up to 4 years if a student remains in good academic standing. White students with similar financial needs who participate in the TRIO College Readiness Program offered at UNI Center for Urban Education could also be eligible for the program. We have a number of need-based financial programs in place, said Kristen Woods, the university's Senior Associate Vice President of Enrollment Management and Student Services. Many of those, like the Tuition Guarantee Program, are open to all students with the appropriate level of financial need. This really took it a step further with our students in Waterloo Public Schools, she explained. UNI and Waterloo Schools officials worked on the new award to boost access along with student support and retention, so they're able to persist and graduate as well. It's really a commitment to students in Waterloo Public Schools. It will be open to East, Expo, and West High Schools students from the class of 2022 entering UNI full-time in the fall. Kingsley Botchway, Waterloo School's Chief Officer for Human Resources and Equity, said this is a meaningful way to help the district's low-income and minority students get a college education. As we talked about university equity and inclusion in the Cedar Valley, we believe that this is a monumental step forward for the University of Northern Iowa to support Waterloo schools in this way, he said. We hope more students from Waterloo Public Schools do head to UNI, seeing this pathway that we've built together, added Woods. We really want to make sure that the community knows the scholarship is available. Students interested in pursuing the award must fill out the free application for federal student aid. Those eligible for federal Pell or Supplemental Educational Opportunity Grants, as determined by FAFSA, who also meet other requirements, will get their first-year tuition and fees covered. If students meet the eligibility requirements, they will receive the award, says Wood. Federal grants will be supplemented with the Panther Impact Award or Panther Success Award, and if needed, the UNI TED Scholarship. Amounts awarded for the two Panther scholarships depend on grade point averages of at least 3.5 or a Regents Admission Index score of at least 320. The Panther Impact Award also depends on achieving an ACT score of at least 20. The amount of the UNI TED scholarship depends on a GPA of at least 3. Other scholarships received by students will be stacked on top of those, said Woods, for additional expenses like housing and meal cost. The award will be renewed full-time students who are in good academic standing, meaning they maintain a GPA of 2.0 or higher, and show through filing the FAFSA that they are still Pell Grant eligible. We have made sure to allocate funds to carry out this commitment, she noted. We are just going to continue to build as we take this year to year. Among current Waterloo School seniors who are from the racial ethnic minority group or participate in the TRIO program, Botchway said about 56 to 60 students would be eligible for the opportunity based on their income level. 18, we know at this point, would qualify if they so choose UNI. That is the number of the group who have already completed the ACT college entrance exam. Woods said the university is prepared to provide other kinds of support for students to help ensure success in starting their education and taking it to completion. We have extended orientation programs. We have ongoing engagement programs designed for this population. We know retention and persistence in graduation is something that requires support and engagement, but also financial resources. So we are working to do both. More information about the Waterloo Access Award can be found at the University of Northern Iowa website, admission.uni.edu, Waterloo Access Award, or by contacting Janine Bazie, Assistant Director of Diversity and Recruitment, at janine.baeza@uni.edu. That's her email. Or you can call at 319-273-2281. Well, congratulations on such a stellar program. Other news in the Cedar Valley. Cedar Falls Initiative encourages litter pickup. Organizer, "We live in a great city and I want to keep it that way," by journalist Andrew Malone. Cedar Falls. A movement to help clean up Cedar Falls is growing one trash bag at a time. Jeremy Swanson is using the power of social media, his platform as a Hanson Elementary School's sixth grade teacher, and special deals and gift cards from local businesses to encourage people to grab a bag and pick up litter in Cedar Falls, as well as make them aware of the sustainable alternatives to the refuse that ends up in the disposal. "The purpose is not to have huge cleanup events," he said. "It's to encourage people to help when they are available within their own schedules." Swanson started a Facebook page, the Cedar Falls Cleanup, last winter. He began campaigning for a cleaner community when he, an outdoorsman who loves to canoe, backpack, hike, came across trash in his travels. Now his wife quips that he has an unhealthy obsession with collecting it. "When you are out there, you don't want to see evidence of civilization, but I found myself coming across large plastic bags, beer cans, pop bottles, tires, and other trash. It sort of ruins the experience when you see the human presence," he said. In addition, he brought up the mission to the students on Earth Day in April. The movement blew up when Jay's Homestyle Cookies and Four Queens ice cream cones were offered as incentives for the kids to get out there and make a difference. The word spread throughout the schoolyard with the help of YouTube creators Mr. Beast and Mark Rober and their crowdfunding campaign, Team Seas, pushing for the removal of millions of pounds of plastic and trash from the world oceans and rivers and beaches. The special incentives were donated by a handful of area businesses like Tony's La Pizzeria, Jimmy John's on Viking Road, Four Queens, Jay's Homestyle Cooking, Ninja University, and the Pump House Pub and Grill. In order to earn a prize, grab a garbage bag, or for the little kids, a grocery bag, fill it with trash, and email a photo of it to strawlessincf@gmail.com. or through the Facebook page Messenger. A lot of people, Swanson noted, are not necessarily taking photos of themselves, but nominating more humble individuals who routinely pick up trash on their walks or in the neighborhoods. He says the impact can be even greater if partnerships are established with area businesses and organizations to come up with a plan to limit the trash in well-traveled areas like bike trails, parks, apartment complexes, and retail destinations, and on Main Street after a busy weekend, as well as in other hot spots like Viking Road, Union Road, Hudson Road, and Greenhill Road. Swanson made it clear, though, that he doesn't want people to think trash is growing on trees in Cedar Falls, but that a community can always do better. "There are plenty of cities that are in much worse shape than we are, but if you look around Cedar Falls, you'll find trash," he noted. "We live in a great city, and I want to help keep it that way. I want people to see the beauty that we have here." Beyond his efforts to get more people outside collecting litter, his goal includes building awareness. "There is an even better way to address the issue at the source by using more sustainable, reusable alternatives as opposed to the single-use plastic items that will be thrown away. Nearly every item I find when I take the time to do my own cleanup in a single-use item, like plastic bottles, fast food restaurant packaging, single-serve chip bags, straws, plastic bags, takeout containers, and styrofoam, If we exchange these items for reusable ones, we start to solve the problem of waste in the first place, as well as remove the opportunity for the waste to be placed in our public areas. He was surprised to find that the amount of plastic waste that doesn't actually get recycled and feels there is a need for more recycling infrastructure. Also, people should take advantage of places like Best Buy, which, he says, accepts electronics and appliances for recycling. If you have ever driven into large cities along the interstate, you often see that the roadways are horribly strewn with litter, said Mayor Rob Green. In response to the initiative post, it brings down the pride of the area significantly. We can do much better. Around the community, neighbors have helped to spread the word, while the initiative by hosting yard signs with the program details. To learn more, also visit its Facebook page or its website at http://strawlessincf.weebly.com. Cleaner Cedar Falls, good idea. Well, listeners, you are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls paper for Tuesday, November 16th, 2021. I'm your reader, Mary Dove. Let's turn to today's obituaries. Mark Thomas Larson, age 71, passed away November 13th, 2021, at Mercy One, surrounded by his loving family. He was under the wonderful care of the Mercy One staff and Cedar Valley Hospice. Mark was born on November 14, 1949, in Riceville, Iowa, to David and Vera Benson Larson. Mark grew up in Cresco, Iowa, and attended college in Mason City. He joined the Army in 1971 and served in Vietnam, receiving a service medal. On July 22, 1972, Mark married Janet Lovelace. He and Janet lived the first 6 months of marriage in Hawaii and then moved to Cedar Falls, Iowa. In 1986, the family moved to Traer, Iowa. Mark built homes and estimated flooring the last 20 years of work at BK Tile. He retired November 13, 2015. He was a member of the Zion Lutheran Church in Dysart and the American Legion. Mark was a faithful and loving husband, father, and grandfather. He was a talented carpenter. He loved golf, music, and traveling with Janet, but he most loved having fun with his family and friends, especially with his wife, children, and grandchildren. Survivors include his wife of 49 years, Janet of Traer, two children, Tom and spouse Alexis Larson of Westminster, Colorado, Sally and spouse Chris Turkina of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, four grandchildren, Jacob and Avery Larson, Cameron and Brady Turkini, and three brothers, John and his spouse Sharon Larson of St. Charles, Missouri, Alan and Donna Larson of Naperville, Illinois, Jim and Brenda Larson of Cresco, Iowa, two sisters, Ann and Pat Larson of Ankeny, Iowa, Jean and Roger Griffin of Tucson, Arizona, many nieces and nephews. Preceding him in death were his parents and his parents-in-law. A visitation will be held on Friday, November 19, 2021, from 4 to 6 p.m. at Overton Funeral Home in Traer. Please be COVID conscious. A service will be held on Saturday, November 20, 2021, at 10:30 a.m. at Zion Lutheran Church, with burial to follow at the Buckingham Cemetery in Traer. After the burial, there will be a luncheon at the church. Memorials may be directed to the family, which will be donated to Dollars to Scholars, Cedar Valley Hospice, and the Zion Lutheran Church. Overton Funeral Home in Traer is in charge of the arrangements. 319-478-2775. Condolences may be left at www.overtonfuneralhomes.com. Helen Green, 88, died Sunday, November 14th at Ravenwood's Specialty Care. She was born February 12, 1933 in Green, Iowa, daughter of Earl and Clara Roweder Refuge. She married Wayne Green January 5, 1953 in Waterloo. He died June 13, 1997. Helen graduated from Green High School, where she was a cheerleader. She enjoyed being a homemaker, but after her children were in junior high, she entered the workforce, working in retail at Black's Department Store, Yonkers, Kmart, Cook's, and Dillard's. She was very active in Ascension Lutheran Church, being involved in the church choir and Bible studies. She would travel to different churches throughout the state, singing for weddings and services. Her love of singing continued until she transitioned to Ravenwood. Helen loved being with people, whether they were her family, friends, or at church. Friends at weekly card clubs are her many friends she made while she and her husband wintered in Cape Canaveral, Florida for 45 years. She will always be remembered for her endearing smile and being dressed to the nines. Survivors include her family, Gregory Green, Steve Green, and Kimberly Green, all of Waterloo, her granddaughter, Sarah and Josh Winberg of Cedar Falls, and three great-grandchildren, Macy, Addison, and Kira Winberg, a brother, Robert Bobby Ruffage of Texas, and a sister, Sharon Lorenzen of Webster City. Preceded in death by her husband, two brothers, Earl Jr. and Donovan Refuge Ridge. Services will be held 1:30 Thursday, November 18th at Ascension Lutheran Church with burial in Garden of Memory Cemetery. Public visitation will be for 1 hour before the service on Thursday. Haggerty Wyckoff Garup Funeral Services on West Ridgeway is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be directed to the church. Online condolences may be left at www.haggertywyckoffgarup.com. William Bill Philo, 91, of Cedar Falls, died Sunday, November 14, 2021, at home, while in hospice care. He was born in New Hartford, Iowa, on May 1, 1930, to Claude and Grace Mason Philo. He graduated from New Hartford and went on to briefly attend UNI. Following service in the U.S. Army, he was united in marriage to Loretta Noonallen on December 30, 1949, in Waterloo. Bill farmed southeast of New Hartford for 30 years. He also worked at John Deere for 32, including 11 years at the foundry. He was active as a Boy Scout master in New Hartford for 6. He is survived by his wife and children, Dennis, and his partner, Glenna Philo, of Birmingham, Alabama, Linda, and spouse, George Thompson, of Jasper, Georgia, Bruce, and spouse, Helen Philo, of Cedar Falls, a sister, Kathleen Bates, of Texas, 6 grandchildren, 11 great-grandchildren, and 1 great-great-grandchild. Bill is preceded in death by 3 brothers, Dwayne, Dale, and David Philo, his sister Patricia, and grandchild Susan Philo. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, November 18, 2021, at New Hartford United Methodist Church. Visitation 1 hour prior to the service. Burial will be at Oak Hill Cemetery, New Hartford. Memorials will be directed to the family. Online guest book at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. K. F. Elshid, age 80, of New Hampton, Iowa, passed away Saturday, November 13, 2021, at New Hampton Nursing Home and Rehabilitation. A visitation will take place from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, November 18, 2021, at Conway Markham Funeral Home in New Hampton, with a 7 p.m. scripture service. Burial will take place at a later date. Online condolences may be left at www.conwaymarkhamfh.com. Memorials may be directed to the family. Kay Francis was born August 7, 1941, in Lawler, Iowa, the daughter of Harry and Frances Ohm. She attended and graduated from Turkey Valley High School. During her high school years, Kay played basketball and softball. After completing her education, Kay worked various jobs for the Dungy family, including Dungy's Furniture and A&W. Later in life, she stayed home as a homemaker. Kay was blessed with her only daughter, Tammy Ray, on April 26, 1960. She was united in marriage to Henry Hank J. Eschel, Jr. at Trinity Lutheran Church in New Hampton, November 26, 1980. Kay lovingly welcomed Hank's children, William B., Brenda, and Anthony Tony. Together, Kay and Hank enjoyed finding their next treasures, going to rides, visiting friends and family, and eating out. Her greatest joy was caring for her granddaughter, Caitlin, and cheering her on at various events. Those left to cherish Kay's memory are her daughter, Tammy, and spouse Greg Gitch of New Hampton, granddaughter Caitlin and Nathan Schmidt, also of New Hampton, great-granddaughter Adeline Ray, her step-grandchildren, Melissa and spouse Clay Neiman, and family Matt Gitch and family, both of Denver, Iowa. Her sister, Anna Marie Mormon of Plainfield, Iowa, sister-in-law Carolyn Ohm of New Hampton, and Doris Ohm of Rochester, Minnesota, numerous nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, Harry and Frances Ohm, her husband, Hank, her siblings, Laverne Ohm, William Ohm, Donald Ohm, James Ohm, Linda Rother, David Ohm, and Patricia Ohm. Next obituary is William J. Burns, 72, of Quasqueton, Iowa, died Sunday, November 14, 2021, at his home in Quasqueton, Iowa. Willie was born April 4, 1949, in West Union, Iowa, the son of Amandus and Viola Burns. He was a 1967 graduate of Garnavillo High School in Garnavillo, Iowa. He was drafted into the U.S. Army in 1967, was stationed in Korea during the Vietnam War. Willie married Nellie O'Solomon on July 6, 1972 in Galena, Illinois. They lived in Independence, Iowa for a year before making their home in Quasqueton. Willie started working at John Deere in Waterloo in 72 as a foundry worker. After 26 years of service, he retired from John Deere in 1998. In 1986, Willie purchased a building in Quasqueton where he opened a bar named Wee Willie's. He spent many hours there doing what he loved, entertaining people. He is survived by his wife, Nellie Burns of Quasqueton, his two sons, John and Amy Burns of Shoeyville, Iowa, Kenny Shea Burns, Quasqueton, Iowa, four grandchildren, Wyatt, Clay, Tucker, and Beau, a sister, Tony Cann, Marquette, Iowa, two brothers, John and Janet Burns of Dubuque, Iowa, and Alan and Rosie Burns of Winthrop, Iowa, with many nieces and nephews. Willie is preceded in death by his parents, three brothers, Laverne, Mike, and Larry, a sister, Anita Schummel, and two brother-in-laws, Lauren Cann and Joe Schletzler. A funeral service will be held at 10:30 p.m. on Thursday, November 18th, at the Rife Funeral Center, Funeral Home and Crematory in Independence. Interment will be held at a later date. Visitation will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, November 17th, at the Rife Funeral Family Center. You are encouraged to bring your classic car to honor Willie with a final ride to Wee Willie's to celebrate his life following the reception. To leave an online condolence, please go to www.rifecenter.com/obituaries. David Wesley Sr., a retired Department of Commerce officer, died peacefully on November 11, 2021. Mr. Wesley was born in Chester, Pennsylvania, and grew up in various places in Long Island, New York. In World War II, he served 3 years overseas in the North Pacific Theater and the Air Force as a navigator on a B-24. He attended Duke University in Columbia and received B.S. and M.A. degrees. He majored in political science and American history. In 1951, he joined the Department of Commerce, where he served up until his retirement in 1984. During that time, he was an international economist and trade promotion officer. In 1956, he was assigned as a commercial officer in the American Embassy in Pakistan. In 1969, he was assigned to the National War College at Point McNair, Washington, D.C. In 1974, he was assigned to the American Embassy in Tehran, Iran, as head of the commercial section at the height of the oil boom. He remained there for over 4 years, leaving just before the Shah's departure. Mr. Wesley was preceded in death by his wife, Marjorie, his brother William, Bill Wesley, and sister Joanna Lucas. He is survived by his wife, Diane, his son, David, and Jr. of Johnston, Iowa, his daughter, Hillary Malberg, and spouse, Alan, of Reston, Virginia, granddaughters, Jennifer Collins, Kelly, Casey Wesley, Alice Malberg, and great-grandson Cameron Wesley, and Spencer and Weston Collins. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Salvation Army, or SOME. Our last obituary for today is Lauren Francis Joe Adams of Cedar Falls, was 92, passed away Saturday, November 13, 2021, at New Aldea Lifescapes in Cedar Falls. He was born January 14, 1929, in Clarinda, Iowa, son of Ralph and Ruby Chandler Adams. Joe graduated from Murray High School, then trained to become a barber. He served in the United States Army in the Korean War from January 1947 to July of 1951, following an honorable discharge. He married Marilyn Shepherd on October 28, 1951. They later divorced on May 2, 1975. Joe married Florine Sweet. She preceded him in death in 2004. Joe co-owned a local barbershop for many years and then drove a bus for NU High after retirement. Joe was preceded in death by his wife, Clarine, parents, stepfather, Carl Booth, both brothers, Roy and Darwin Adams. He is survived by his children, Becky and spouse Jean Kritz of Cedar Falls, Alan and spouse Marla Limbreck Adams of Waterloo, step-grandchildren Sherry Rogers of Morristown, Minnesota, Mike Hayes of Denver, Iowa, Scott and spouse Trudy Sweet of Cedar Falls, 5 grandchildren, Carlene and Ron Myers, Matt and Jackie Mullen, Ashley and Alex Madurs, Allie and Reed Swanson, Mike and Christy Adams, and step-grandchildren Carrie Tim, Olivia, Jeff Heidemann, Zachary Sweet, Melanie Hayes, Alice Hayes, and Barnett Kritz. 5 great-grandchildren, 15 step-great-grandchildren, and many beloved friends and family members. Joe's visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. on Tuesday, November 16, 2021, at Dahl Van Hove Show Funeral Home of Cedar Falls. His memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, November 17, 2021, in the Larson Chapter at Nazareth Lutheran Church. Use entrance number 7 off University, followed by military honors. Burial will be at Elmwood Cemetery of Dyke. A luncheon will follow at the Ambits Post 47, 1934 Irving Street, Cedar Falls. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to St. Croix Hospice and condolences may be left at www.dahlfuneralhome.com. Joe enjoyed being outside, working with plants or mowing. He was an avid bowler and enjoyed traveling with Cleone. One of the highlights in Joe's life was skydiving for his 80th birthday. He will be greatly missed. Okay, readers, we have some time to do some sports news. Let's do You and I Notebook. The headline reads, Warn on Receiving End of Selfless Meaningful Act. The article is accompanied by a colorful picture with You and I's women's basketball coach, Tanya Warren, laughs with sisters Braylee and Jaclyn Sidebotham during the Panther Caravan at the McLeod Center in 2019. Warren recently received a special gift from South Carolina women's coach Dawn Staley by journalist Zach Martin, Courier sports writer. Tanya Warren isn't on social media. She's had zero clue what another coach was doing. UNI's women's basketball coach received a package from South Carolina's head coach, Dawn Staley. Automatically, Warren knew that this was going to be something special. She was right. Staley sent a piece of her 2017 national championship net to every African-American head coach in Division I. Warren took a picture of her package through the Panthers team Twitter account on Sunday. "It says how selfless she is," Warren said during Monday's media availability, "for her to take the time to do what someone had done for her says a lot about her. She's a great coach, but even a better person." It was a tradition that Staley continued from the first black head coach to win a national title in Carolyn Peck, who led Purdue to the promised land in 1999. Peck sent Stanley a piece of that net and stressed the continuation of the tradition. Warren knows the impact Stanley has had on women's hoops throughout the black community. "She's extremely humble, a terrific mentor, terrific teacher of the game," Warren said. "She does so much outside of the game for so many people. We will continue to do our part to pave it forward." On the basketball court, UNI is aiming to have a quick turnaround after its home opener loss to 8th-ranked Iowa. The Panthers traveled to face North Dakota on Wednesday, a rematch from last season. It was a contest the Bison won 85-68 a season ago. UNI is 6-2 all-time against North Dakota State, a program out of Summit League. "We have to do a better job at executing," Warren said. "They have a terrific point guard who can score in a variety of ways. We have our hands full." Panther items: Farley still thinks a playoff spot is possible. UNI head football coach Mark Farley sees an avenue for his group to sneak into an at-large football championship subdivision playoff spot. "That path is less straight than it was 3 weeks ago. Back-to-back losses to Illinois State and Missouri State on the road have sent the Panthers to a 5-5 record as they prepare for Saturday's regular season finale at home against Western Illinois. "We have to recover from that and see where things stand," Farley said. "I would guess we're around that 18-20 category right now. What happened on Saturday will make a difference." UNI has beaten three teams ranked inside the FCS top 25. It has lost three times to top 25 opponents. It went toe-to-toe with then number 7 Iowa State in the season opener. Farley believes the only bad loss would be to the Redbirds. "That hurt us as much as at the end of the day. The Leathernecks entered with a 2-8 record but have zero problem scoring points this season. Just three times they have been held to under 20. They've given up points, but at the same time they're putting up a ton of points," Farley said. "That's what is the most concerning." Okay, let's see. Listeners, it's wrapping up. We'll see if we have time to end with my favorite part of the paper. And maybe it is yours too. Call the Courier. Why is the Cedar Falls remodeling City Hall instead of building a parking ramp? Your Call the Courier questions answered. Question: has there been any evidence uncovered that Communist China is the source of all of North Korea's sudden expertise in ballistic missiles? Answer: it depends on who you ask. Some intelligence commentators have speculated North Korea's missile launches are likely supported by Chinese technology and expertise. Some experts say China sees North Korea's nuclear missile threat as a means to dissolve the U.S.-South Korean alliance, thus creating Korea's unification under an authoritarian North Korean regime. But most members of the Chinese expert community strongly oppose accepting a nuclear-armed North Korea, and China's official policy is for an eventual denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Question: why is Cedar Falls remodeling City Hall when a parking ramp is much greater priority? Answer: last month, City Council unanimously agreed to allocate time during a November goal-setting session to explore the possibility of constructing a downtown parking ramp. At the same meeting, Councilors voted 6-1 to move forward with the plans for the City Hall remodeling project, which staff argues is a priority because of the need to replace an outdated mechanical system. Councilmember Dave Sires was the only one to vote in opposition. Mechanical, electrical, and plumbing improvements are half the estimated cost of the $4,576,787. In addition, staff also said it would like to repurpose the section of the building where the police department used to be stationed and hopes to create a more user-friendly space for citizens and one where employees can better perform their jobs. Question: did Ashley Hinson vote to pass the infrastructure bill? Answer: U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson voted against the $1 trillion infrastructure package the House passed on November 5th. I strongly support targeted investments in real infrastructure that will improve Iowans' daily lives and keep our economy moving, but I strongly oppose going down Speaker Pelosi's road to wasteful spending and tax hikes, Hinson said in a statement on November 8th. Question: in what proportion do I combine baking powder and salt with all-purpose flour to create a self-rising flour? Answer: mix 1 cup all-purpose flour with 1.5 teaspoons of baking powder and 1/2 teaspoon of salt to make it self-rising flour. Question: what became of the limousine that President Kennedy was shot in? Answer: after the investigation into the shooting, the 1961 Lincoln was actually rebuilt as an armored vehicle with bulletproof glass and was put back into the presidential fleet until 1977. Presidents Johnson, Nixon, and Ford rode in it, although President Johnson hated it and would only ride in it when no other car was available, according to a CBS News report. The limousine is now in the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn, Michigan. Question: what does the term ball screen mean in basketball? Answer: it's when an offensive player sets a screen for another offensive player who has the ball. Question: how does the International Space Station travel in 5 minutes? Answer: it travels about 4.76 miles per second. And there you have it, reader. That does it for today's reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls paper, The Courier, for Tuesday, November 16, 2021. I'm your reader, Mary Dove. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.